Welcome to the WFO Life Podcast. Buckle up for interviews, insights, and practical discussions, and the occasional intellectual oddity, all designed to help you master self, master craft, and accomplish any life mission. Welcome back to the WFO Life Podcast. William Curtis here and Chris Story. We have another I'm excited about this topic. We're going to talk about the seven pillars of mindfulness. Chris, how are you tonight?
Doing great. Just I'm trying to decide if I'm going to be good and go to bed early in preparation for an event I have tomorrow, or if I'm going to succumb to the baser instincts of my manhood and stay up late to watch a UFC event. You
know? What are you going to do that's going to you got to get a good night's sleep? This sounds intense.
Well, it's not going to be too intense, I don't think. It's just that I have to, be somewhere like by 7:30 on a Sunday morning. Which is normal, a little bit out of my routine, arguably as a Marine, I should be able to, feel like getting up 7 days a week early like Jocko, but I do not.
I was going to say, aren't you up at like 4 a.m. every day?
No, not me. Not on the weekends especially, but we're actually, it's pretty cool. We're doing a volunteer event with the Travis Manion Foundation, and we're going to take a bunch of donated food, and instead of traditionally just deliver the food to the food bank, being a bunch of former and current military people, we're going to get all the food that was donated, put them in rucksacks, and ruck them 5 miles to the food bank.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool. So you get a little workout in the middle of it.
Yeah. So, and I'm going to have my family. I'm one of the leaders, so I have to be there early, but my family's going to partake in it too. So even down to the 8-year-old, he's going to have his backpack with 4 cans in it, like, or something.
70 pounds of canned goods in his.
Yeah. It was like, why are you going so slow? It's your body weight.
You?
I'm sure, it's not going to be that bad, but there's a pretty big UFC event tonight, and it's one of the ones that Joe Rogan is actually calling the event, and he doesn't do a lot of them anymore.
All right, who's fighting? I got to know, because maybe I'll watch it.
So the main event is, I guess there was a vacated lightweight title because the guy Khabib was his name, who was like a legend, and he finally retired. And so it's Charles Oliveira versus Michael Chandler. And then there's like a co-main event, which is pretty big. It's Tony Ferguson versus another guy that I'll butcher his name. But they're all like I said, some of the legends have kind of retired. And so when that happens, and you say, I'm retired, they have like two of the top contenders get a chance to fight without fighting the champion, because, the champion. So it's kind of, it doesn't happen that often where they do it like that, where, a champion retires when he's still the champion.
Right.
Typically, when you've gotten beat a bunch of times after having been the champion, you kind of retire, when Father Time says, this sport's not for you. But, this guy retired, Khabib, he was essentially undefeated and, in his mid-30s. But I guess his dad was one of his trainers, and his dad died, and he just, doesn't have the heart for it anymore to fight without his dad in his corner.
Until he makes a comeback a few years from now.
Yeah, until he makes a $20 million fight comeback. But anyway.
Well, I'm a fight fan, so I typically watch boxing. In fact, I may look this fight up because I just got sucked in. You know how when you try to watch something and that you got to download a new app and they tag you for $19 a month or whatever? I did that for a Canelo fight last week. And so I'm like, okay, well, I got this app now, and I'm going to keep it for at least a month, so I'll check and see if this fight's on there.
Yeah, I saw where that Canelo. I don't watch boxing that much, but I follow the results, and I guess he basically broke the dude's eye socket, at the end of one round, and then he couldn't continue or something.
Yeah, they made it a few rounds, and I knew there was something wrong. The guy, seemed like he was putting up a pretty game fight, but then he just like didn't get up, from his corner, and his orbit looked really weird. So he broke his face.
Good times.
Yeah. So let's jump into the topic. So I want to set this up. And the topic today is sort of an intro to mindfulness. You have touched on it before on one of the monologues you had done a few weeks ago. And it just so happened that I have been in the process of reading a book
called Full Catastrophe Living. It's and the subtitle is Using the Wisdom of Your Body and Mind to Face Stress, Pain, and Illness. Who doesn't need more of that, right?
Oh, for sure.
So the book is written by Jon Kabat-Zinn, and I found this book when I was in the midst of a kind of personal development program a few weeks ago, and it was one of the books. It's pretty dense. It's about 400 to 500 pages long, and I didn't want to jump into it because I was trying to read a book a week, and I wasn't sure I was going to be able to get through this one. But I really am glad I picked it up and started, and now I've been just burning through it. The point of the book is to teach the value of mindfulness and meditation. And before, you know, somebody zones out here and, you know, with this and, you know, everything is so fast paced nowadays. But mindfulness is a very valuable practice. And what I like, and just as a kind of pre-summary of this book, is that Jon Kabat-Zinn also ties in the current medical and scientific research that supports the practice of meditation and purposeful mindfulness. I love that aspect of it because as a physician, you know, I'm pretty open-minded to trying things that don't have, you know, double-blind placebo-controlled trials. You know, I'm willing to take things on faith if somebody says something works.
Yeah.
But I always love it whenever they can tie research in that says this is a practice that people need more of. And so before I get into that, let me define, according to Kabat-Zinn, mindfulness is the awareness that arises from paying attention on purpose in the present moment and not non-judgmentally by focusing on the breath. The idea is to cultivate attention on the body and the mind as it is moment to moment, and so help with pain, both physical and emotional. That's the author's definition he provides of mindfulness. And then with my final – before we get into the discussion of the seven pillars that he lays out of mindfulness, kind of the seven characteristics of mindfulness, I want to say that I'm a beginner with this topic, okay? This is a topic that I have done meditation for extended periods of time, but I feel like I'm still in a beginner phase of the process of meditation. But I've done enough of it that I feel I can at least speak to the value I've personally experienced and then, of course, what I'm learning from this text. So, Chris, do you – before we get into that, do you have any you know, significant experience with mindfulness or meditative practices?
I guess I do, and I think for me, I separate the idea of meditation and mindfulness. I could see how they could be one and the same for
right.
some people. For me, mindfulness is more of like I guess being deliberate about you know, whatever you're doing. And
right.
I think for me, like the in terms of a like a pseudo meditative or a mindfulness practice. My on the days that I'm, you know, good on my routine, I have, you know, a quiet spot either at home or at work where I sit and I do a couple standard readings with, you know, no music, no other stimuli in the background, no TV. So I sit quietly and focus on a couple readings from a couple different books. And so that's, I guess, my mindfulness practice. In terms of meditation, I have less experience, and like I said, I could see how people, I mean, they can be one and the same. For me, they're a little bit different because I wouldn't call my mindful practice of like setting myself up for the day is like, you know, I guess traditional meditation, but
right.
it's more of like, hey, you know, here's the things I know that I should do for my mind and body and spirit, and I know that I'm always more calm and more focus and deal with challenges better when I do that daily.
Right. Perfect. Yeah. And I had mentioned I did a 60-day personal development challenge recently, and part of that practice, besides like reading a book a week and all these and exercising twice a day and all these kind of things, I did a it had a meditation component. I would think of meditation as a tool of mindfulness. It's
yeah.
Sort of a practice. But what I learned in that process is that meditation doesn't mean you have to be just sitting, you know, focusing on your breath. That's not the only way. There are meditative practices that surround you can walk and meditate. And that's my favorite personally right now is
yeah.
what I do is I love to do it early in the morning as the sun is coming up. And in fact, if anybody, you know, from the Future Focus Health Network, you know, I often post like little quotes of the day or something, and I take photos of the sunrise typically. And that's usually when I'm on those walks, right as I start, if I think that, you know, and I grab those photos. But what happens is you can meditate by like breathing and like counting your breaths, how many steps it takes to inhale and exhale. You're still focusing on, you know, not the external, but just kind of quieting your mind and focusing on your breathing. So I like that. I know that a lot of Buddhists, there's like type, you know, monks and things that do that as a practice, walking. I like that. And I find it more difficult to do just seated traditional meditation. But the concept of mindfulness is definitely something I've had at least enough experience with that, and I'm kind of experimenting with it right now, that I think it's worth sharing with everyone. No, so
absolutely.
Let's, I guess let's get into the topic. And what we were going to share is part of Jon Kabat-Zinn's what he like has outlined, the seven sort of attitudes that form the foundation of mindfulness. And then I think what we'll do is I'll list them off, and then we'll just go, you know, point, but we'll go attitude by attitude. Mm-hmm. And then maybe we can discuss them and bring, you know, shed some light on each one. So the seven attitudes, and this is from the Full Catastrophe Living, Jon Kabat-Zinn. These attitudes are, first, non-judging, patience, beginner's mind, trust, non-striving, acceptance, and letting go. So he goes on to point out that these attitudes are they're interconnected in many ways, but they are kind of features of mindfulness that are very important to try to achieve. So let's start with the first one. The first one was non-judging.
Yeah.
And this is the idea of being compassionate and sort of open-hearted, choiceless, and you know, to your awareness, meaning you're not judging anything that's happening to you in the present moment, but rather just existing in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to share first, and then this is one I think I struggle with because my career. I have to make snap decisions, and I frankly, as a physician, I judge people all day long. Not necessarily on a personal level per se, but I have to
judge their situation. Yeah, judge their situation, right?
Yeah. So my mind jumps to that very easily. I have found that it does that, and I categorize and I judge experiences and situations, and feelings and behaviors. I judge them, put them into patterns. That's exactly what I do. I look for patterns. That's mm-hmm. my whole job. And so I find that non-judging is one that jumps out to me that I don't know if I struggle with it, but it's something that I know that is like automatic pilot for my brain. And I need to, you know, I need to be careful with that because sometimes it can bleed over to maybe judging situations. Like, you know, I think I know everything. Boom. If I know everything, I already know what's going on with you. Just do this. And maybe it makes me, you know, more short, you know, with people, things like that. What do you think about non-judging?
I think I kind of try to or in my mind when I read this, I was separating maybe internal versus external. Right.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, in your job, like you were talking about, I mean, sometimes it's kind of required. Depending on, you know, your
exactly.
line of work and the situation. But I guess the way I read this in a good way is if you internalize it, it's a little bit different because I think a lot of times when we have, you know, difficulty being mindful and we struggle, I guess, with the outcome of being, you know, I guess, too prejudging about what's going on with ourselves, then, you know, as the author suggests, it locks you into a certain pattern of, you know, reacting and repeating thoughts about a current situation because you're judging it based on experience or a good or bad situation that you've had that's similar. And I think the cool thing about this is saying, you know, unless you're, you know, being mindful and trying to be aware that you are judging, you know, yourself especially – you might not even be aware of it if you're not in tune to it. So, and I right. think a lot, and you think about it, I mean, whether it be a traumatic experience or just a mundane experience, you know, if you use a prior experience to inform every other experience that's even remotely similar, then, you know, you can be interjecting anxiety. You can be, you know, actually being prejudiced towards, like, you know, a situation, or in, and that can be yourself, right? Like if right. you, if you had a, you know, a high pressure situation, especially that you didn't deal with very well, and then you're presented again with that situation, it can bring thoughts of anxiety and things like that. And so, like, what he, I think what he's saying here is like, hey, you know, don't, you know, come into a situation, with all of those thought patterns if you can avoid it. And obviously practicing mindfulness in this way in a non-judging manner will help you to do that, because, you know, like he says, you might not even be aware of it. And, he even says, like, choiceless awareness. So you go into things, you know, not blindly. And I think sometimes people mistake mindfulness. Like, well, you know, if I'm just going to be in the present moment, does that mean I'm not going to use my experience? Does that mean I'm not going to plan? It's like, well, no, it doesn't mean that. It just means that when you're in the moment, you know, be in the moment and don't, like, you know, try to, you know, create anxiety and things that aren't there because you're, you know, judging yourself or, you know, somebody else based on a situation. So I thought that was pretty cool how he said it, just like choiceless awareness, and be mindful of the patterns, so that you're not locking yourself into a certain scenario over and over again that might not be healthy.
Right. And before we move on to the next one, I want to, one of the things when I started meditating and understanding the non-judging component at the attitude, what I noticed is that during my workday, I was much more at ease in difficult situations because I didn't prejudge a given situation. So for instance, sometimes I have maybe a patient that something didn't go well with them, or they're difficult. Either yeah. their personality is very difficult. And so sometimes, depending on how what my mindset is, my attitude during the day, my level of energy, sometimes I'll look at the schedule and go, duh, you know, that guy yeah. or whatever, you know. And yeah. in my mind, I'm just saying it in my mind, but I'm like, oh, man, I don't want to see that guy. And, you know, and so what ends up happening is, like, I'm pre-setting my attitude and I'm judging that scenario before they ever get there. And what I notice is that when I have done my mindfulness at practices in the mornings, you know, I start my day that way. Sometimes I've walked into these situations and I just said, I'm just going to let this happen the way it needs to happen. Mm-hmm. And I just breathe and walk into the room. And oftentimes that goes completely different than I thought it would. And, yeah. you know, and sometimes even when it was going difficult and it was turning out the way I thought it was going to turn out, you know, I remember thinking there was one just the other day. And I remember thinking, God, this is going just like I thought it was going to go. And I kind of thought in my mind, I just kind of smiled, though. And I thought, just give him the time to do what he needs to do. Give him the time to say what he needs to say. And that was like, was being non-judgmental about that situation and at least being aware of it. And I like that. So let's move on to the next one. The next one is patience. Seems pretty straightforward, but patience is the ability to bear difficulty with calmness and self-control. And what do you think about this one, Chris?
I thought the most interesting part of the way he presents it is the role that our egos play in to us not being patient, right?
Right.
So, because sometimes, I guess I hadn't ever really thought about it exactly like that, that when you're being impatient, you know, the opposite of being patient, a lot of times it's not something that's actually there. As he points out, it's like your ego, the self-centered part of us, it wants the scenario to be a certain way. And,
right.
you know, and sometimes that, causes us to kind of want to rush through one moment to the next and not be patient because you're like, I've seen this movie before. You know, this is how I have to, you know, do this to, you know, to make things go the way I want to, instead of just, I think this comes into play a lot when you're trying to be a good listener, especially right. like, you know, the scenario you brought up. when you're dealing with a difficult coworker or a difficult situation. You know, there might be specific things that you butt heads with your kids or your wife about. So instead of, you know, I know this struck me when it comes to being a good listener, because you know, you're listening with the intent like you want to pop in and respond, versus listening and being patient to understand what they're actually saying. So I think for me, right. I know I struggle with, you know, not being patient when it comes to communication. And that's kind of what spoke to me on this. It's like your ego gets involved because you want to have a good response. So.
Yeah. And I'm going to put it out there. I am not a patient human. And this is something that I work on routinely. And I think my default mode is to be impatient, and I that also struck me about the ego, and that's, you know, screaming for things to be different than they actually are, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's something that I think it's important to slow down and understand that things happen in the time frame they're supposed to happen. It's kind of like when you're in the car and, you know, there's somebody in front of you and you're just like, ah, you know, bang, bang, hitting the steering wheel. I got to get through. And the reality is, and then you find out there was an accident. And if you would have been, you know, 30 seconds faster than you were, you would have been involved in the accident. You know, we all had some scenario where like it was a near miss or something. And if you wouldn't have had that, you know, the kids didn't have their shoes ready before school, or, you know, that moment that made you late that day, you might have been in some catastrophe. And I think that just life happens that way. And sometimes it's better just to kind of watch and be patient and let things unfold. And so that's why it's one of the attitudes of mindfulness.
No doubt.
The next one is beginner's mind. And the beginner's mind is when you begin to observe what is here in the present moment, and the thinking mind tends to believe it knows, you know, all about what is happening, or tries to control what is happening by desperately changing that, you know, seeking to change information. So this is the idea that we want to just sort of look at any given scenario instead of prejudging it, as we've talked about before, but actually approach things maybe like a child would, and just sort of try to learn. I like to think of it as, you know, have a learning mindset in any given situation. I think that helps a lot with people that have anxiousness about things that are unknown. If you're anxious of a new situations, maybe a new way to think about it'd be just have a beginner's mind and accept what might come, and that what might come is you can learn from that. And sometimes I think just thinking about a situation that, like, well, what am I going to learn from this, is less anxiety provoking than others. And that's kind of what I gathered from that.
Yeah, I was thinking of it in reference to other topics we've discussed about, you know, just kind of having a growth mindset. No matter how good you are or how well, you know, you perceive to be doing at this stage in life, you're not a finished product. You know, you always have a chance to learn from almost anybody you come into contact with. And so I think that I've experienced this a ton in the military, because, you know, early on, I mean, there's so many things to figure out and how to navigate, you know, in the military lifestyle, both, you know, outside of work and at work. And so sometimes it's very easy to become jaded, and, you know, you have experience in tough situations, and a lot of people don't want to hear anything, you know, outside of what their experience has taught them. And sometimes that will keep you alive, you know, in the military,
right.
but also, you know, sometimes the 19-year-old Lance Corporal, you know, looks at things with a completely fresh perspective, and you know, you may not agree or, you know, learn from everything they say, but, you know, taking that, you know, like this says, you know, the beginner's mindset, you know, you can learn a little bit from almost any interaction you have. And so I think it's just a, you know, kind of like the ultimate version of the glass half full or half empty, you know, mindset, where you're like, hey, you know, I'm going to take every opportunity I can to, you know, treat myself, you know, as a growth mindset person, and, you know, being a beginner, because there's really no downside to it. You know, if
right.
you can, as long, you know, sometimes our egos, you know, going back to another idea that we talked about, can keep us from having that, because we don't want to seem like we don't have all the answers, especially if you're in a position of authority. So.
Right. The next of these attitudes for mindfulness is trust. And essentially, trust comes in because when you meditate and spend time in a mindfulness practice, you start to examine your feelings and you see where your mind goes, and you learn to trust yourself and your own feelings. I think a lot of times we go through our life and we don't spend enough time understanding what our own motivations and our own thoughts and emotions are about any given scenario in our life. And so what ends up happening is we sort of just react to things. And you know, if you have some negative experiences in your life, in relationships or in, you know, business situations where maybe you felt like you judged something wrong, well, what happens is you start to lose trust in yourself, in your own, maybe your own choices or just your own thought process. And so sometimes that leads you to, I see a lot of folks that kind of rely on other people's opinions because they haven't sat quietly long enough to develop their own, you know, their own intuition about things. And I think that's why trust was, it's kind of my summary of why trust would be a valuable, you know, part or an attitude of mindfulness. What did you gather from that?
I think the most powerful little excerpt out of what I read in the summary that struck me is he states, you will learn that you and you alone are the best person to know what's going on inside your own skin and sure. what is happening outside of it. And I think for me, you know, this topic almost spoke to more to, you know, how I deal with other people. And right. in terms of when you see somebody, and it ties in, I think, to the patience thing, right? So some of us that are in, you know, management or leadership positions, you see something, your default position might be a little bit impatient, but, you know, that person, you know, knows best and what's going on inside their head and inside their own skin, as this, you know, talks about. So,
right.
You know, it applies to ourselves too. You know, you have to trust, like, hey, if I'm not feeling right about this, or, you know, I know that, you know, this is normally, you know, how I react, and how I react is not good. It's the same thing in dealing with other people. So if you see somebody struggling with, you know, something going on, or, you know, something going on in their personal life that you can tell they can't get past it, you know, trust in, you know, yourself to know, hey, I'm going to, I guess, have a default sense that this person is not, you know, making this up, you know, and right. that for you, I could see how that could be like a patient, like you've, you know, diagnosed the patient, you've given them, you know, the medication or the treatment plan, and they come back and they're telling you, like, hey, doc, this is not working. You know, this is how I feel. And you're thinking, like, there's no way you could be feeling like this with this, you know, if you're doing it the right way. And so, you know, I could see how, especially in your profession, that would be challenging. You know, in some sure. cases, people may not be honest with you that they're doing everything, you know, exactly right, right. as you prescribe. But that's still, you know, they're experiencing that in their own skin, either, you know, mentally or physically. So I think, you know, sometimes, especially when we're dealing with challenges in our, you know, life, you know, personally or professionally, I think that's what struck me, is like, hey, you know, if that's their reality, you know, you have to, you know, trust that about yourself or trust that about other people to a certain extent, and be like, I need to understand it more instead of being impatient on how I deal with it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the next of the attitudes of mindfulness is non-striving. And I think the concept here is that the active mind, the ego mind, is in constant stream of thought. And if you've ever meditated, when you meditate, the idea is you're typically just focusing on quieting the mind or witnessing the mind, and then focusing on breathing or some bodily, you know, symptom or physical, you know, condition. And what happens is, sometimes the mind will run away and it'll chase down rabbit holes, you know, and you'll realize, oh, wait, 2 minutes went by and I'm thinking about what I got to do at work or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, I call that the monkey mind. But what happens is, you know, I think we're always in this mode. I know me personally, I'm one, you know, busy squirrel trying to get a nut all the time. You know, I've always got some kind of project going on, and I'm working, I'm building classes, I'm racing cars, I'm, you know, I'm just constantly going. And so for me, this one really struck me as, like, you know, the idea of not striving is just to – it's okay to just exist. It's okay – you know, meditation is not a practice that you're, you know, you're doing something. You're just being, and you're just existing. And I think just spending time dialing out of the active mind, you know, state of constantly trying to climb a ladder, constantly trying to solve a problem, it's better sometimes just to unplug that, quiet the mind, and just exist. And that's okay. There's no – you're not being lazy. You know, you're not and sometimes it unplugging from those things really reduces anxiousness and, you know, symptoms of stress by just understanding you don't have to solve all the world's problems right now, and you don't have to do so many things all at once.
Yeah.
So non-striving definitely stuck with me.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked when he talked about just, you know, in reference to non-striving, that the practice of mindfulness, you know, involves just simply paying attention without judgment to whatever's happening. And that sounds simple enough, but I know for me, a lot of it, the challenge to this is reading too much into what is happening or what isn't happening, you know, sometimes with dealing with other people or dealing with situations. So I think this ties in for me a lot to the Stoic mindset. It's just like, hey, you know, you can only control what you can control. And I think when you're when your mind is, you know, building things that aren't there, you know, mindfulness really helps in this area. It's like, hey, don't be building castles in your mind about, you know, well, you know, what's going on or what isn't going on. You know, be in the moment and have this interaction. You know, I think one of the earlier things he wrote is like, hey, you might experience thousands of sunsets, but you've never experienced this particular sunset, especially if you pay attention to it,
like,
you know?
That.
And so, so I think a lot of that is the same thing with, like, you know, non-striving is like, hey, you know, be in the moment and, you know, to the extent that you can, you know, push things out of your head and then just take things for what they're worth, not, you know, trying to, you know, build a problem that may or may not even be there. So.
Hey, and I'll add, sometimes, like, when you said that term, like, push things out of your head, sometimes it's not that active. Sometimes it's okay just to observe what's going on there. You know, people think that seems kind of strange. How do you observe your own mind? If you try to just focus on your breathing, you'll start to realize there's a witness there. There's a part of you that is able to witness what your mind is chasing. Mm-hmm. And it just takes quieting and doing the reps, but you don't always have to force it. Sometimes you can just sort of, you know, just watch and understand what's there. And it doesn't always have to be so active.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times it's just detachment. You know, you have to be able to detach, you know, and the more you practice doing that mentally and physically, you know, and sometimes it, like, literally physically, just like, hey, even if you're excusing yourself to go to the bathroom, but really it's like, hey, I need a mental break from this situation, and I'm gonna go reset, you know, take 5 deep breaths and then come back. And then sometimes that's all you need to have a fresh perspective on it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The next attitude of mindfulness is acceptance. And I like this one, but this is the process of the willingness to see things exactly as they are at the present moment. This one actually spoke to me the most. And I have so many examples of this in my own life, but I mean, even just today, I was projecting on one of my, you know, my race car, and, you know, I thought I was going to be all ready to go to this big race and all this stuff. And as I'm doing the final once over, I notice that there's a critical safety issue. There's axle fluid dripping down, you know, onto one of my tires. You know, which is dangerous, and, you know, obviously, and so I remember the first impulse was like, you know, like just gnashing of teeth, you know, like, how can that, you know, I've got another gremlin with this car, you know, but then there was this moment that said, well, let's just see, you know, this is just where you're at. This is a setback, but it's okay. Just let's take the wheel off and let's see what it was. And it turned out it was just a couple of loose bolts, done, cleaned up, a-okay, glad I found it, could have been a catastrophe. but it was cool how quickly the idea of acceptance came to me. Just, this is where you are. Like, say people that are stressed out and they're like, maybe they're going through they have financial problems, or they lost their job, or I hear every catastrophe you can imagine every day. And what happens is sometimes it's better just to say, okay, this is just where you are right now, and be realistic about this situation. And don't – you know, you don't have to judge that situation. You just have to be able to see it clearly, because a lot of times what happens is people don't see exactly – they're not really accepting what's happened. They put a mental construct on top of that. And so they make things bigger than they actually are.
Mm.
They blow things out of proportion. They link it to other things that have happened in the past and say, see, this is another example why I'm a loser, because it's another example. When it's not, it's just one situation, one moment right now. That's all it is. And I like that, and that one really stuck with me, the idea of acceptance. What say you?
Yeah, I think the most powerful part of this one was kind of the simplest way to think about it, which was remembering that things can only change in the present moment. And I think for me, when you think about that that idea, it's like, wow, that's simple and powerful, because realizing you can't change the past, and you know, you can't change the future, you know, in detail that we know of, you know, and right. I mean, there's the butterfly effect, I guess, but we don't know how, you know, it's not A plus B equals C, right? There's not like a direct relationship to all that. So remembering that things can only change in the present moment. So when it comes to acceptance, I think a lot of us have a hard time accepting what has happened before that we can't change.
Right.
You know, anxiety about the future. Right. That we don't know how much influence we can have. So realizing that you can only change things in the present moment is actually a super empowering idea when you think about it. You know, acceptance doesn't have to be a bad thing, because I think a lot of people think it's like, oh, you know, this bad thing happened, or this person died, or, you know, this person broke up with me. But it's like, well, you can't change what happened already. You know, you can't change what, you know, exactly is going to happen in your future, but you can have influence on the things that are happening in the present moment. And so I think for me, acceptance, or the idea of it, is kind of an empowering thing, you know, not fighting with things, you know, you can, you know, I guess have more energy to deal with the things you need to deal with when you're not encumbered by the past or the future, you know. So for me, that's what this kind of, you know, twist on mindfulness has for me. So.
Yeah, and one more thing on that. You know, people that have seen me as a patient with, you know, depression or anxiety have heard me say before that, and I got it from Eckhart Tolle's work, The Power of Now, the idea of depression is mentally shifting your frame of reference to the past. Usually people that are depressed are focusing their energies on things that have happened in the past, a loss, a death.
Like regrets, kind of?
Yeah, regrets, betrayals, abuses. I mean, you know, things that are real. I don't minimize what they are or why people have depression, but usually the mental framing is a past. It's looking backwards. And anxiety typically is a mental framing towards the future, and imagining and daydreaming scenarios that may or may not ever happen. So people that have anxiousness are looking at that big event is coming up next week, the recital or the wedding or whatever, and it's going to be a disaster because of this, or, you know, what if the weather changes, or what if I, you know, all these things. And what happens is we, because of framing and looking and running these scenarios in our head in the future, we create anxiety, when the reality is there's infinite numbers of ways something could happen before then. They could all be good. There could be, you could win the lottery and, you know, have all kinds of incredible things happen before, you know, this big event that comes up. The point being, looking to the future excessively and not being present and accepting the current moment is definitely leads to anxiety, panic, and all kinds of other, you know, kind of neurotic symptoms. The last one that will of the seven pillars or of mindfulness is letting go. And this one, I think, ties in fairly closely with acceptance, because if you accept something, in many situations, you have to simply let go. And this is letting go is like a non-attachment. It's an attitude that's essential for mindfulness. And it's, you know, people practicing this don't, they don't cling to things. They let things go that maybe even things that were, you know, negatively impacted them, or people that treated them badly, or situations that they can't change. Sometimes the only thing a person can do is just let that situation go, like just let it be, and either, you know, just let go of the worry, let go of the problem, and realize that you don't have to stay attached to something. How did that land for you?
You know, it kind of reminded me of the popularity of that book in the past couple of years, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I never read it because I read some reviews and the ideas behind it, and I was like, okay, I'm sure it's a cool book, but I think I've gotten enough out of that sentiment from a lot of other areas that are more, I guess, timeless. But I think the on the idea of letting go, it I mean, it's easy and it's difficult, you know, depending on the situation. And I find myself reflecting on this when I'm trying to help my my 13-year-old, you know, deal with things, you know, as the you get more I guess aware at that age of people judging you or how they respond to things. And I think I've learned a lot on this topic also from Stoic philosophy, where, you know, a lot of it is about, you know, your intention of things. And if something happens that, you know, is good or bad, well, especially bad, I guess you would say, right? So letting go, I mean, obviously when something good happens, you don't have letting go is maybe a non-issue. But I think, you know, just letting things be the way they are. I mean, you can't control, like, even if you made a mistake, right? And somebody, like, rightly, you know, cut you out of their life because, like, you made a stupid comment or you made a bad decision. It's like, hey, you know what? I screwed up. It is what it is. I'm going to learn from it, and I got to move on. So saying that is one thing, but mentally and physically dealing with it the right way, I think is tied into all these seven pillars we're talking about. You know, to get to this point where you're okay enough with, you know, being in the moment, realizing what happened, learning from it, and being able to let go truly, you know, it might be the pinnacle of mindfulness and stoicism, right? I mean, if you can truly just say, hey, you know, it is what it is, and, you know, I'm moving on because it's not going to be healthy for me to do anything but just let go. So I think, you know, in a lot of ways, I mean, it's ideal this one is last because, you know, you really need to do a lot of the combination of the other six to be able to do this the right way. So
absolutely. I want to read one little section, an excerpt from this article, and because I like the way it was, it gives an example of letting go. Mm-hmm. And it says, no force is actually required. Just soften the contraction. Just let go. You do it all the time, actually. Make a fist. Squeeze it tight. Now let it go. Notice that feeling. Try it again. This is the physical sensation of letting go. Practicing meditation, you are practicing letting go on the inside and becoming familiar with the interior sense of contraction in the body and the mind. Then practice letting go of that. I really like that. And that's why meditation has physical components to it as well. And these are things that, you know, I think they're just attitudes to strive towards. I think they're just part of the process. I could look at several of these and realize I come up short on several of them at given times. But knowing that they're there and knowing that that's the ideal is the point, and that's the purpose of mindfulness. Chris, any final thoughts before I close out?
No, I really enjoyed this, and you know, just in spite of how daunting you said the size of that book is, you know, I think I'm going to find myself trying to pick it up and read it, because to unpack these, I mean, I think the way we did is helpful for us and other people to kind of get an idea of it and have it be, you know, manageable, like a bite-sized chunk. But I think a lot of these, to really have the tools to employ them in our own lives, you have to really get into it a little deeper. So it's going to be a cool thing to read. So.
Yeah, definitely. If anybody's struggling in their life with anything, health problems, emotional, mental, social issues, read Full Catastrophe Living by Jon Kabat-Zinn. I definitely recommend that. And before I close out, I want to invite everyone to the Future Focus Health Network. In particular, if you go to the Future Focus Health Network, and we'll leave the link in the show notes, I want to invite you to the section under classes. There is a class called Cortisol and Stress. That class is free to anyone in the Future Focus Health Network. And what that is it's my summary of the link between stress and the physical complications of stress, which includes changes in hormones and physical symptoms and all kinds of things like that. But one of the best parts, and the reason I tie it in with this episode, is that one of the closing lessons is on stress management, stress reduction. And Full Catastrophe Living and mindfulness and meditation are one of the practices that I recommend. And I give several references. Not just this book. I also give several from Thich Nhat Hanh, which is a Buddhist monk. I've got several other topics and readings you can do on the physical symptomatology, how to use breathing techniques and box breathing and all kinds of other practices that you don't cost you anything. They're just things that you can do from the comfort of your home when you have a chance between, you know, activities. So I hope you guys will check that out. And if you heard about that class on this show, please let us know that by leaving us a comment. And you know, Chris and I have been doing this podcast a year and a half now. I'd like to ask our listeners, if this has been meaningful for you, if this, you know, whole podcast and the different topics we do has been meaningful for you, go to your favorite, you know, iTunes, Stitcher, you know, Spotify, leave us a review. We'd love to, you know, hear what you think about the show, and obviously leave us a good review. If you don't like the show, you don't have to leave a review, but we'd love your help because that gets us to more people. That's kind of like that's how the game is played. You know, you get more feedback and more people find your show. So share it with your friends and anyone you think might benefit from mindfulness, and then obviously share our your thoughts with a review of our podcast. Chris, have a great night.
You too. Thanks.